It's time for 41 is the Mic, a weekly Chiefs podcast with Nick Jacobs of KSHB 41 and Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. 41 is the Mic starts now.
Welcome back, everyone, to another mighty episode of 41 is the Mic. I am Matt Derrick from Chiefs Digest, along with Nick Jacobs from KSHB, your Easter enthusiast. Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm good.
Happy Easter to you.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. And right back at you, guy. I would say that most of the candy that I would have wanted sold out. So hopefully my nieces did some, you know, proper Easter egg hunting for me, and there's stuff in their basket that they don't want that they would like to give to me, because it is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, Easter is a dangerous holiday for me, and especially was this year, because this is later Easter. I mean, we got a little extra, you know, time into it and everything. And the longer Easter, later Easter is into the year, the longer Reese's peanut butter eggs are available. And those things are the most addictive food in the world to me. I mean, I can down hundreds of those a year. Peanut butter cups, as of they are the greatest food stuff ever invented. I think we should all agree on that. But the ratio of peanut butter and chocolate in the egg is absolutely perfection. I mean, there's just nothing better. I mean, if I could spend an entire podcast just talking about the greatness of Reese's peanut butter cups and the various holiday shaped foods that they make, but the egg is, I mean, primo. And so the sooner Easter can get over with, I can get back on my diet, Nick.
Well, I mean, I don't want that to wreck your world. So I guess we apparently need to get past that one. I am, you know, because it's always, I will say this about Easter, it's always interesting that they have the, like you said, they have the Reese's egg, but then they also have the Cadbury eggs. Then they have the bunny that could either be just pure milk chocolate or caramel. So, you know, I mean, I saw those were all sold out. And so I was like, see, I was restraining myself. I'm like, yep, no, oh, that's a tough break. They're sold out on Easter. Can't go buy them.
You know, you mentioned the Cadbury eggs, and I'm going to use that as a transition to football, Nick, because okay. The Cadbury eggs, as you may or may not know, very popular in the United Kingdom.
No.
And the Chiefs have a new member of the team from the United Kingdom. Welsh rugby star Luis Rhys-Zammit is now a member of the Chiefs, Nick. I almost pronounced his name correctly on the first try, and here's the problem. I said Zammit because, as like everybody else, I look at this name and I see Lee Zammit. Or as my dear friend Ryan from back in the day, said on Facebook, when he sees it, that Luis Rhys-Zammit is how he pronounces Lee Zammit when he's drunk.
Well, we'll have some opportunities to get used to the name, and obviously, I know people were already asking for my thoughts within minutes of it being announced that he was agreed to terms with the Chiefs and everything. I mean, look, we'll see what happens when the pads come on in August. Like that's when we'll see where he's at, how he's developing, and all that type of stuff. He's got a long road ahead of him to be a positional impact player. And that's not a knock on him. It's because he literally never played the position at a collegiate level for the most part, let alone a professional level. So what we can say about him is he runs fast in a straight line and has good closing speed. And I know he has a good 40 time, but there's a lot more that's going to be involved in football if he plays running back or receiver or he's a returner. So, I mean, like, I'm one of those things where we'll wait until August. Until then, it doesn't really, you know, you're just occupying time, you know. That's really what that is. It's like sitting in a rocking chair. You're just using it to kind of pass the time until you go do something productive.
Yeah, you can see the highlights, and you posted those some of his highlights from rugby. You can see how the skills will translate to the football game. But like you said, I mean, it's not the same thing. Rugby and football are two different sports to a large degree. I mean, not football derived from rugby, absolutely, but they're very divergent. Yes, the ball may be a spheroid, but they're different shapes, carried differently, caught differently. There's a lot that he's going to have to learn, and some of it may be easier because, like, the football is a smaller shape, so maybe that will be easier for him to catch than a rugby ball. I've never caught a rugby ball, so I can't compare the two. Could not tell you. But picking up an NFL playbook and all of the assignments and everything that goes with it will be extremely difficult. And I could see in a short-term window, yeah, I mean, maybe in his first year, there's a couple of things that he could pick up as a package. But my honestly expectation and recommendation is always go into these with low expectations. Because anytime that you've got someone who's converting to a brand new sport, I mean, I would look at this year as a redshirt year. And if he gets the international exemption from the Chiefs, then this will almost certainly be a redshirt year. If they can make it, if they use the international exemption on him, he doesn't count against the 90-man roster, and they could sign him to the practice squad. He would be a 17th member of the practice squad. There is an outside chance that they could even use the international exemption for a second year on Shu Godrick, who was currently signed to the 90-man roster. So, I mean, they do have a few options there with that spot. But if he were to be that 17th player on the practice squad, he could be elevated for a couple of games. But, you know, that's really it. I mean, if they choose that role for him, he wouldn't be on the 53 at this year. And really, the only thing you could see him doing is maybe special teams. So, I mean, I would think, especially at his age, too, I mean, if this was a redshirt year, fantastic. You know, teach him the game of football, see what happens, and then a year from now, see what you got. But I just, it's to me, once again, you know, when you acquire a player like this, I think modest expectations at best is the word of caution, because expecting more than that kind of sets you up just for disappointment.
Yeah, don't worry, Matt. I get you covered on the lowest expectations possible right now. So, like I said, until August rolls around, I don't care. And I know that sounds mean to say, but that's just the reality, because, like, until the shoulder pads come on and I see him have to take a hit, like a real true hit, whether it's in preseason or in training camp throughout, like, none of it matters to me. You're just guessing. You're just spending some time guessing until the draft happens. And so, like, I mean, you know, you got to have lowered expectations. So that's where they're at right now for me.
I will not pin this quote on anyone in particular. I will just say, Nick, you probably have heard it as well. It's a mutual friend of ours within the organization who will say, I don't learn the names of anybody until they make the 53. So that's probably the way to go.
And that was not me saying that.
That was not you. That was somebody with the team, not you. We both know who it is, but I'm not going to drag him under the bus.
Okay, pray for the best.
Well, it was a quiet week for the week otherwise for the Chiefs. So we can kind of dive right into it as far as, you know, the draft and where we're going next. And today, Nick, is, I know, a passion position of yours. And we are going to talk about left tackles. And I promise everyone, we're not going to spend the entire segment talking about Joe Alt as much as we both want to.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, we'll give him his rose. But yeah, no, we're not going to spend all the time on Joe Alt as he leaves the collegiate ranks to join one of the top 10 teams that's likely between the Patriots, Chargers, Giants, or Titans, and has to go other than, like, the for him selfishly, I'm hoping it's the Chargers for him, because then he'll have a good career. The other three are 50-50 right now, so that's not an ideal spot to go for the first 4 years if he goes to the other spots.
Yeah, I keep seeing the Giants as a, you know, maybe the lowest landing spot for him. He's just not going to get past the Giants, and that is disappointing, because I can absolutely see him playing for the Giants for 14 seasons and maybe playing in a wild card game.
With the way their franchise is currently set up, yes, that is a possibility, but as we know, all it takes is two right hires, and then you can maybe three, technically, if you include the quarterback. But Giants don't have to worry about the quarterback situation right now, because they don't have that going for them.
Well, we know Joe Alt would be at the top of your board. So
yeah, and like I'll make it brief on him. Like, he's the top of my board because he, like I've said before, he combines the old school technique that his dad used to have in the league and used to be kind of the foundation of rock of what offensive linemen were in the 90s and 2000s until the spread offense came around. And Joe's very good at that front of that, but he combines that new age athletic ability that offensive linemen need to succeed in a spread style of offense. Joe has all that available to him, so you get the best of both worlds with him, which is a rare combination for offensive linemen. With, because the thing is, the spread game all the way back to 06 has slowly diluted offensive line technique and offensive line play overall, to where offensive linemen used to be guys who had to put their hand in the dirt and drive people off the ball in both run and pass, or have strong punches and have to be stronger than what they were. Over time, the spread game over almost the past 20 years has put guys in more of a retreat and more of a certain way they have to set up, and kind of more of a mentality of you're just trying to widen the pocket or you're trying to just keep the defender at bay. And so you've needed a different type of offensive lineman to succeed. So when you get these guys who have the proper technique, that was kind of the cornerstone of what offensive line play was, those guys get snatched up pretty quickly because you still have a lot of people from those eras that recognize that very quickly and are happily able to take that because it's one less thing they have to spend 3 to 4 years trying to develop at the pro level.
Yeah, and there's a handful of tackles at the top of the draft, though, that you feel like kind of fit that. I mean, Joe's not the only one. I mean, there's a couple of plug-and-play tackles that could come in and play immediately, right?
Yeah, I'll get to the next one, and he's going to be the hot name, but I'm not a huge fan of his, but, I mean, there's going to be people out there that will be. And there's Olu Fashanu, I believe is how it's pronounced. From Penn State. He reminded me a ton of Orlando Brown. Like, just watching him play, and I watched multiple games, because I was like, man, please tell me this guy in the top 15 that's being projected top 15 does not continue to look like this guy, and that it was just an injury or a bad game. But his kick step's so lumbering, and that's the worst part of if you're wanting an offensive lineman to protect Patrick Mahomes, especially a developmental guy who's just, you know, coming out of college, you really don't want them to have lumbering kick steps for the most part. And when I say lumbering, it's not a smooth glide. It shows a lack of athletic ability with how lumbering they can be. I loved his stance. I thought he had a good punch, but, and I mean, I got written down here, he's a good drive blocker, and when he wants to put a defender in the dirt, he's capable of it. And it's just when he was pulling, the running back is beating him to the hole most times, which is the same thing that happened to Orlando and Baltimore and then also in Kansas City. And just he looks slow on his kick step, and like he needs to move in short area. If you're trying to have him go a gap and a half, 2 gaps, 3 gaps over to do a reach block or try to do a zone block, it's not going to work out. He's going to get to beat by the defender because that lateral quickness is not there. And so, like, he needs, like, a power run scheme type of thing where you get the guy right in front of you and you take him to the second level. That's kind of where his success, I think, is going to be overall. And so there's just – he wasn't smooth on pickup and pass offs. And I got that's another part that's going to happen if it's lumbering for you, is the way you have to keep your head on a swivel and be able to adjust hand-eye coordination and that part of it. Like, that's another key part of it. So I know that he's a very popular name right now and everything, but just watching, I was like, man, I don't know if he's really a fit for what the Chiefs want to do based on the games that I watched.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, he's one of those players who certainly, at least in the pre-draft process, seems to be a kind of divisive. I mean, I know I saw one ranking that had him as the best tackle in the draft, which I'm kind of curious about. And then you'll look elsewhere and he'll be the sixth. I mean, his combine scores reflect a little bit of what you said, which is that his athleticism score is pretty mediocre for a tackle. I mean, pretty much average. He graded better as far as production goes, but you know, balancing those two out. I mean, it goes back to film versus the combine results and the metrics. I mean, you got to marry those two. And in this case, it seems like maybe the film and the athleticism disagree. I mean, in that case, you know, you do have a player that I think you have to have some concerns about, right?
For me, like, there's guys further down the board that I'm like, I would take those guys in a heartbeat because I have less questions about them protecting 15, and I'd feel a lot more comfortable than what he brings to the table.
The conventional wisdom seems that he'll probably be one of those guys that might be gone by the Chiefs get there. Are there, aside from Ault, are there any other tackles that you see that, you know, the Chiefs would probably be a good fit for the Chiefs or somebody they could be interested in, but probably won't be there at 32?
That won't be there at 32. All right, we'll get to that part of the party. next one's going to be the guy from Oregon State that's obviously mentioned in the top three on a regular basis with Talisi Fuaga. I believe it's how it's pronounced. He had a really smooth kick step. He was really good at mirroring. And when people, like, it's good to see it at the combine, but then when you see it in actual coaches' film, like, that's when you get really excited because you have to have a certain level of foot quickness to do the mirroring to where if a defender is adjusting and then they try to go wide, then cut back in and you're right there to kick step and mirror right to it. Like, that is a special level of skill that you have to have both in hand-eye coordination, reaction time, and foot quickness to be able to make happen. And he's one of the better ones at that. And he can get to the second level quickly. I liked how good he was on double teams, how quickly he pulled into space. And he knew how to widen defenders. His pickup and pass-offs were smooth because of the mirroring ability. And above all else, I thought he had a good anchor that didn't struggle with power rushers like some people can. And above everything else, I thought he had good hand placement. He wasn't really trying to grab on the outside shoulder pad. He was willing to kind of grab right in the steering wheel and be able to drive a defender or keep a defender at bay. And when he locks on a defender, he buries him in the dirt. So, like, if he happened to sneak down there, I would not be opposed to that in any way, shape, or form. The next guy I'm going to talk about is Georgia, which is going to be Amaris Mims, I believe. I am trying to, you know, it's gotten in my head about Adonai Mitchell when I said Adonis 4 or 5 times last week. So I'm trying to make sure I get the pronunciation key.
We've all been there on him. So that's why AD Mitchell is the only way to go. Great that he has a nickname.
Yeah, well, maybe utilized down the road. So with Mims from Georgia, he's raw because of the lack of starts that you would like from a tackle coming out of there. But he doesn't look as big as listed because I think they had him like 6'7", 340 is what some people have him written down as. But on coaching film, he does not look that big in terms of, like, you know, just this overweight offensive lineman that's struggling type of thing that you would think by hearing 340 pounds. He doesn't look that part. I mean, the biggest thing about Mims, how long his arms were, that's the thing that stands out about him. And I know that may sound weird, but, man, like, the way he's able to keep defenders at bay with ease, and it just, you know, it's just like breathing for him. And the power, he didn't even realize the power he has yet. Once he gets an O-line coach that taps into that level of power that he's got available, like, I'm telling you, like, that's going to be a dominant tackle. Because, he barely tapped a couple players and put them in the dirt. And, like, I'm like, man, if he gets to, like, a Trey Smith level, like, it's going to be frightening what he could be as a tackle in the greatest way possible. He wants to keep a defender on their – he wants to keep defenders on their rear. It's a passion of his, so he'll toss them around like a rag doll sometimes. Like, he just – and eliminate that. He got into space very quickly for 340-pound man, how quickly he got into space, how well he widened the pocket, and above all else, what I've written down in the notes here, his stances were really, really good. And for a guy to be 6'7 and to have really good stances initially, that means that keeps the pad level down and that gives them good leverage to start out with. So the fact he already had that part down, I was really, really impressed with that. So, like, that is something that I took notice of, and I'm like, okay, he's got the stance down already. At 6'7", 340, to be at that level, like, there's not a lot you have to build off of initially whenever they come into the league. Where I had the knock on him is he would stop his feet at times on drive blocks, and he could get overpowered by some smaller defenders just by simply stopping his feet. So that's where if he gets that combination of power and keeps the feet moving, then that's whenever you've got kind of the complete offensive tackle that I think you're looking for.
You know, we talked about this the other night on our Q&A about arm length and how important that is. And you talked about Mims' arms. Mims' arms are 36 1/8 inches. Mm-hmm. That's pretty long. I mean, that's an incredible wingspan. And for a tackle who has to be able to reach out so much on the outside, that is huge. And, you know, for those of you who don't follow it closely, I mean, 34 is kind of considered the minimum length that, you know, a tackle really needs to have. And it's not to say that you can't play with shorter arms than that at the tackle position, but like Joe Tooney has shorter arms than that. That's one of the reasons why he's a great guard and doesn't play tackle. I mean, if he had longer arms, he probably would have been a tackle in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But he can play it if needed, despite that. But Mims really has that in spades. I mean, and when you're talking about a tackle, you know, I think that the two traits, one physical, one athletic, that you look for, and you've hammered on them, is, you know, arm length and footwork. And Mims, like you said, I mean, you have got the one concern about him as far as, you know, in certain situations, but he really seems to have the whole package, doesn't he?
Yeah, you're going to need to have a good, feel comfortable with the medical report on injuries and why they were happening and what was going on. But in terms of how raw of an athletic prospect he is and how he's probably going to go in the top 24 right now, like that's where if there was somebody that you felt comfortable with jumping up to go get, Mims is probably one of those guys, because you're thinking right now that the Steelers potentially would be in that range of somebody that'd be very interested in a player of his caliber if they don't go wide receiver. But yeah, Mims is kind of the first one that I think is actually reasonably right now within striking distance if you wanted to go get a tackle. Just a question, do you feel like he could play left tackle for you? Or do you think he's stuck at right tackle, which is where the tape was that I saw him playing at Georgia?
It's intriguing to me that, you know, you've mentioned actually quite a few tackles so far. I mean, it goes to speaking of just about how deep this position is. I mean, there's four tackles right there that all conceivably could be gone by the time the Chiefs get on the board, but there would still be options there.
Right. And then the next one that will end up being an option, not necessarily, he wouldn't be, I wouldn't have high markings for him on my board, but I know other people like him, as J.C. Latham from Alabama. I wasn't really enamored with him. I think he's going to end up being a right tackle. And here's the key thing that I didn't like: how much he hops in his reach steps. Now, the reason that's such a big deal, when a guy hops, they're not actually taking the definitive step at a good angle with low pad level. They're hopping like a rabbit. And when you hop, people like Chris Jones plant you on your rear. Like, I mean, because they have the arm quickness and ability to get that done quickly. So NFL defenders are going to notice that pretty quickly, and they're going to take that habit right out of him. Or he's going to be seen on the ground a lot, and they're going to be like, why is that offensive lineman on the ground so much? And it's going to be because he hops. Hops like a bunny, gets that pad level up, exposes that chest, and boom! Like John Madden right there. That's how you do that.
Just absolutely ruining the man's career on Easter because he hops too much. I mean, that is just...
I didn't even put those two together.
When you had the bunny hopping out, we were all over that.
Yeah. So, and the thing about Latham is, like, the other key point that I've got long notes on him, and when I have long notes on a player, that is not a good thing, because it's a lot of things I got to fix. But the key part that I put down here is he is actually, when he's in a two-point stance versus his hand in the dirt, he's a different player each time. When he's in a two-point, I think he's got a lot. I feel like, yeah, he has a good stance when he's in a two-point and his hands are in good position. When his hand's in the dirt, he has a good drive block but seems to late on his punches and pass pro. So, like, that's the other thing a team would have to kind of work with on him when he's in those two spots, just kind of where he's at. But, yeah, the hopping kind of got me, and I'm like, that's a lot of reps that have happened over the years that you're going to need probably another 1,000 to fix. And that's going to take a while, and that's going to be a lot of a guy struggling in camp and practice, and you don't have the time for that if you're investing a first-round pick in that player.
I could probably fix the hopping though in one easy session.
Yeah.
And that is just by giving him a, I would give him a Reese's peanut butter egg on every snap in which he doesn't hop.
Matt, it's worth a try.
If that doesn't solve the problem, nothing will.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
So it's worth a try. Yeah, next guy I'll go. This guy is going to be fringe for a second round. Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma. I thought he mirrored really well. I thought he had a solid punch. I didn't like how high his pad level was in his stance, and he pops up right out of it. So that's the part that they're going to have to work on. Because I know my O-line coach a long time ago, we had the shoots. So, like, you had to do stances out of that, and if you got too high in your pad level, either your helmet hit the steel pipe or another part of your body hits a steel pipe, and you learn pretty quickly that, hey, my pad level is too high on this one. And so it was a good thing that trained you on what where to keep your pad level at. So that would be a lot of shoot work, basically, on that one. But, yeah, and like, he's got quicker feet than you anticipate for his size. He does a good job riding defenders out, and he can adjust in the inside move and take them wide, which I was pretty happy about. So he's capable of doing both drive and reach blocks, and I would say he was 50-50 on when he'd connect on the kickout blocks and pull through. He'd come in a little bit hot and reckless and miss some of the blocks sometimes. And so that's where you got to learn how to throttle back and slow down to be able to make some of those.
That yeah, that's a you got some guys you need that would need some work, Nick. I mean, even at 32, you might get some guys that need some fixes.
Yes.
Is that kind of your line? Is that at that point where you would say at 32, okay, if these guys are all gone and I'm sitting at 32, either I'm going elsewhere or maybe I'm trading back? I mean, is there anybody else borderline, or at this point you're really talking about guys that you would take further in the second round?
Yeah, at this point, like. I feel like Guyton's going to be that line for a lot of teams to where, like, there's enough to work with, but you still got to – there's enough that you can invest in at the same time and feel comfortable. Because once you get to Kingsley, Suamataia. Yeah. I thought he was too top-heavy, and, like, it was lumbering for him. And I thought his pad level was too high. And all that's going to happen when you've got a big belly, like, it's tougher to bend, I know from experience. So like, you know, like
we're both there.
Yeah, and you're gonna be higher in your pad level, and the taller you are and the bigger belly you have, the more trouble you have of being able to bend and flex and be able to get in good position. So he's gonna have a tough time, I think. And I with speed rushers, I think that's going to be his biggest problem very quickly, just because of all the hiccups he's got with just the basis of what he's got to work with. And then he can't handle the spin move because he didn't have the foot quickness right now. He's got a heavy foot and or heavy feet, not just foot, not one, but it's both of them. And all that comes from being at that size. So I'll get a couple more because we're starting to run out of time. The lot of time I have available today. But I'll say Christian Jones from Texas. I'll put on him. He struggled athletically pulling in the space, but he did a good job on his lateral quickness movement within short area. I thought he had a strong grip that was able to lock on defenders, stop their movement. He had a good kick step that allowed him to maintain leverage around the edge. And his pickup and pass offs were strong, and so I was pleasantly surprised with that. Blake Fisher from Notre Dame. We're getting into the third round now. I like him almost as much as Joe Alt, Matt. Okay.
Wow.
I really like him as much as Joe Alt. I thought he's a very fundamentally sound right tackle. He's very comfortable right tackle. His kick step was quick. He gets into space well, moves defenders. Fisher's strong on double teams, pulling into space and getting to the second level. He had a really impressive anchor. And for people that don't know what anchor is, basically when a defender starts to try to overpower you and bull rush you, can you set your rear down enough and are you strong enough in your lower body to stop their momentum immediately? And if you have to, some defenders and Andy Heck used to do this all the time up there, to where a guy has to hop with both feet swipe the hands if they can, and then reset. And if you can do that, like in terms of the re-anchor and readjusting to get lower to stop a defender's momentum, Blake Fisher was capable of all those, and he rarely got moved. Once he got his anchor set, he rarely got moved. And if he had to re-anchor, he locked in, and he put defenders in the dirt when he had the chance. Thought he mirrored very well against defenders, and he's natural at picking up and passing off. So that was – we have a couple more guys, Matt. You let me know the road we want to go, and we will get there.
I want to know your draft crush. I want to know who outside the top, the first round, is the guy that you have fallen in love with, and if you were the Chiefs, you'd take no matter what.
So it's going to be the man from Yale. We're going to talk about him.
The Yaley.
It's going to be Kieran Ajimaji, I believe is how it's pronounced. I think that's it. Kieran has such high upside as a tackle. He has the ideal size you want in a tackle. Then he has the ideal arm length, and he keeps defenders at bay with it. But above all else, he's so nimble on his feet, and he mirrors really, 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 really well and shuts down defenders. And his feet are always moving. They are never stopping. It's like the man's out on a dance floor, and his partner is the defender, and he's going to take them where they need to go. And he locks on a defender and doesn't let go. And I understand the competition he's going at, but it doesn't matter to me because that foot quickness travels everywhere. That doesn't matter to the opponent you're playing. That travels everywhere you go. And he blocks with authority when he gets to the second level, especially on reach blocks. And he always, like I said, always keeps his feet moving. So, like, that's a guy that I'm curious if he's going to – where teams see him at in the second or third round. If the Chiefs took him in the second round, I would not be upset about that. It's just I'm curious what teams are going to think by his level of competition if they do or don't want to go down that road.
Yeah, I was interested in him because I don't believe he was at the combine. I didn't see any combine scores on him, and I don't know if you know why or if I hadn't found a reason why that he was not at the combine. But that's one of the reasons why you can sometimes float below the radar a little bit. But the scouting reports that I've read, I mean, Matt, mirror yours, that this guy has a rare blend of size and athleticism and strength that just makes you wonder, why isn't this guy on more higher up on some boards?
Because, Matt, they can't appreciate the footwork.
Well, I was assuming maybe he didn't go to the combine because he's a Yaley and he probably had exams or something, but...
Anything's possible, man.
Anything's possible. But no, I mean, you're right. I mean, the size is absolutely, mind-boggling. And you kind of wonder, some guys are late bloomers. I mean, maybe this guy would have been in a Power 5 school had he, kind of matured at a different rate. And, and obviously it looks like he still has some kind of growing to do in football. But 6'5", 323, 36 and an eighth inch arms. This guy's size-wise is a prototypical tackle.
Yeah, him and I will say Blake Fisher – him, Kieran, Mims were ones I all came away with really impressed. I'll name out some other guys. I won't be able to go in depth about them. As a matter of running out of a lot of time I have available today. Roger Rosengartner from Washington, right tackle. Really loved him. I can talk about him later this week. Frank Crum from Wyoming, another guy that I really liked arm length-wise. I think there's a ton of promise there. Julian Pearl from Illinois was another guy. Athletically, got a ton of promise. He's going to need fundamental work overall, which Andy Heck and the coaching staff would be able to do. But his athletic ability travels. Like, you can't coach that athletic ability. The way he gets into space, how he can get to the second level, his foot quickness, all that, that travels. And so you just got to work with him on some technique points if you really want to use him, either a guard or tackle, because I think he could – easily do both without a problem. And then the last big star that I had among the bunch, Andrew Coker from TCU. That is a guy that he's like if Trey Smith played tackle, in all honesty. Just he's such a good right tackle. And I'm actually going to break him down here for a second. I got a couple more minutes. He's got the foot quickness you want. He's capable of picking up, passing off of these. He's a violent run blocker. You see him toss opponents and bury them if he gets the chance. And he's got the agility to pull into space more than that's above the serviceable level, which is where I have it. He's even better than that. He's got a solid punch. The only thing that I had a knock on him as he quits a little early whenever the defender's getting to the corner because he thinks the quarterback's throwing it, and sometimes they haven't. So that's the one thing you're going to have. But he has the athletic ability to do it. It's just changing his mindset. And then I did like Travis Clover from Georgia State. That was another individual that I thought with the long arms, I saw some promise there. So, I mean, like I said, there are tackles, but as you can tell, there's five or six in particular that I'm like, hey, if they don't get Joe Alt, they got a good teammate of his in Blake Fisher. You got Kieran from Yale. You got Mims. Rosengardner was really good. And then you got Coker from TCU, and you got Frank Crum. Like, I was impressed with each one of those guys, and I think they would all make good Chiefs. I just think from a starting perspective, boy, I'm curious to see what Kieran is able to do in the league.
Yeah, that seems like somebody that definitely, right now at least, is flying a little bit under the radar. I mean, I know not on NFL team radars, but probably media radar more than anything right. else. That's going to be a guy that goes a lot higher than I think a lot of people expect. So we will see. But I know we got to go for now, Nick, but we will be back on the Q&A on Tuesday night. So if there's any tackles that we didn't get into depth with tonight, we can then. So bring your questions, whether it's about tackles or anybody else. It's also going to be live as we're getting results from the vote on the stadiums for the Chiefs and the Royals. So we're going to be talking about that and looking at the results as they come in and maybe what that will mean going forward. I also want to thank everybody because last week's 41 is the Mic podcast set a new record for most views and watches. Truly thank all of you for doing that. And once again, as always, hit the like, hit the pound, hit the bell, hit the all the buttons that you need to, because that helps other people find the podcast. And we truly appreciate it. If you like it, hit the like and share and do all those fun things. Nick, anything you need to add?
We will take all the roses you're willing to give us.
That's right.
All the reviews, all the roses, all the likes, all the shares on X or Threads or Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn or any other thing I can't even think of. Tell everybody, tell your friends, tell your family on this Easter Sunday or just any other day in general. Hey, have you heard 41 is the Mic yet? If you haven't, let me tell you about it. Let's play it right here, right now. Let's start an Easter tradition where we listen to 41 is the Mic and then, you know, just go from there. But yes, thank you to everybody who's listened. Please tell more people so Matt and I can go global.
There you go. And with that, Nick, would you like to say the parting words?
All right. Until next time, we bid you adieu.
You've been listening to 41 is the Mic, presented by KSHB 41, your home of the Chiefs and Chiefs Digest.